year, about 30,000 eighth and ninth graders take the specialized high school admissions test. The test is the singular way into one of the city's eight specialized high schools known for being selective, academically rigorous, elite, and responsible for cultivating the city's most brilliant young minds. Some of the school's alumni include U.S. senators, astronauts, legendary musicians, and business tycoons. The top three schools are Brooklyn Technical High School, Bronx High School of Science, and Stuyvesant High School, and they're the crown jewels of New York City's public school education. For the last decade, the Asian American population of these schools has steadily grown, and now Asian American students make up about 16% of the city's overall student body, but they make up 52% of the specialized high school's population. While Black and Latino students' presence at these institutions are in the single digits, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio is now trying to implement a new system that removes the single admissions test and allocates a particular number of seats to bright Hispanic and Black students at under-resourced schools around the city. The Asian American community is pushing back on de Blasio's new plan, and joining us to discuss this is WNYC education reporter Beenish Ahmed and Asian Affairs writer Wesley Yang. Beenish, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So first off, let's start with the Asian American community that we're talking about specifically. Who are we dealing with?
So it's a diverse group. Of course, Asian Americans comprise people who have origins in China, in India, in the Philippines, the Koreas. But this is also a group that has been growing really rapidly. Their population in New York City has doubled between 1990 and 2010, but their population at the specialized high schools has gone up far faster than that. So they make up the majority of students at the specialized high schools, as you mentioned, about 60%. And some say that that means that the schools are diverse, but others disagree.
And of course, I guess diversity is in the eye of the beholder. So I do want to get into the current admissions policy. Can you guys walk me through what exactly is the policy right now?
So the policy is based on a single test, as you mentioned. It takes place one day in October during the eighth grade year of a student, and it's a three-hour test, no calculators, and that's the only way into these schools. Now, the Department of Education has done an overview of other specialized and elite schools in this country, and they found that New York City is the only one that uses a single test to let kids in.
Really? Okay. So, Wesley, I wanted to get your take on the fact that the Asian American community is pushing back against this plan on the behalf of the de Blasio administration to further diversify these schools.
Sure. The Asian American community, many sort of Asian Americans that many Asian immigrants who arrive here from cultures that have been sort of using a single test to determine the fates of their children educationally and otherwise for hundreds of years. So there's a baseline expectation for many of these immigrants when they arrive here that they're going to invest a certain share of the familial income in test preparation. So there's a sort of unique fit between the single test rubric that the specialized high schools used and the cultural predispositions of this particular group of immigrants. And as a result, the results have been those that we have seen, where Asians, or I think they're about 15% of the population of New York City, but they're more than 60% of the population of the specialized high schools. The specialized high schools happen to have an admission schema that aligns and jives really well with what a particular group of immigrants happens to excel at. And so any sort of proposal to alter that schema of admissions, especially one that has been sort of explicitly announced as being a form of racial reengineering of the schools, as the mayor has done, sort of listing percentage targets for how he wants the specialized school to look like at the end of these reforms, simply is counter to the interests of this particular group of immigrants. And as a result, they are opposed to a move that is not just implicitly, but more or less explicitly aimed at squeezing out the number of Asians that are at these schools.
Well, Wesley, I'm wondering if you can expand a little bit on the notion of what makes these students better culturally predispositioned. Like, what are you talking about when you're saying that there's a culture that makes them better prepared for this?
Well, as I was saying, like, there's a culture of test prep. And so there are all these sort of private storefront academies that, that you know, cost a certain amount of money, you know, maybe thousands of dollars in order to prepare. But that's part of the cultural sort of expectation of families that come here. So even sort of workers who may be working three jobs to make ends meet will have an expectation that 20 to 30% of the family income will go to preparing that child to get into the specialized high school system. Like, the reason they came to this country was in order to access education and put themselves on the route to upward mobility. And this is the path that happens to align well with what their cultural expectations are. When they came here, a sort of infrastructure of test preparation academies came with them, and they avail themselves of this. So there's a kind of sense that you get in some of the rhetoric around the test prep industry that it's some kind of like cynical expedient, because that's the way a lot of Americans think about sort of test taking. But within the Asian context, like, test prep is seen as a kind of endurance marathon where over the course of months or even years of toil, you get ready for a test. And that's seen not as a cynical expedient, but an actual, like, legitimate form of testing of your character.
And I want to just jump in here because I went to one of these test prep facilities yesterday. It was A-plus Academy. And the students who I spoke to there were taking a crash course in the SHSAT. They were there 5 days a week, 3 hours a day. It's a six-week program. They had 2 hours of homework on top of their class time. So they are really drilling this test. And there's a lot at stake for them because a lot of them, as Wesley mentioned, are the children of immigrants who are not so well off. The Asian population in New York City actually is the most impoverished, which a lot of people don't realize. So these are children who told me their parents work in restaurants, work in food delivery, work in garment factories, and yet they're paying about $1,400 for this crash course for their kids to have a shot at getting into a specialized high school. And the proprietor of A-plus Academy, Lulu Zhang, told me that for a lot of Asians, the specialized high schools are a clear pathway to success. They see it as a way for their students, their children, to work at this one clear standard, to ace that, and to have a real pathway to success in a way that they maybe didn't. And navigating admissions to other high schools, which involves often interviews, portfolios, essays, that's a lot harder for immigrant communities to do, especially those like the Asian community in New York City, which may not have really high levels of English proficiency.
So is all of this test prep then being done at the expense of developing other aspects of the young person?
Yeah, that's...
Hi, I'm on the air right now.
Wesley?
I'm Wesley Yang. I'm on the air. I'm not just calling from...
That question. Yeah. So some would say, yes, that these are students who are spending their beloved summer hours toiling away running Scantron tests. But others really see it as a way to gain a place in society where they won't be working. And what I kept hearing in this test prep center was... work smarter, not harder. And that really stuck with me as the ethos of this place. The whole idea of these test prep centers, of test prep culture, is to work smarter so you don't have to work harder. So you can get ahead and maybe have some leisure time that your parents couldn't afford to have.
But again, I'm wondering if there's a back end to this, because once some of these kids then do get into, you know, Ivy League schools or something, there's been some schools that have complained even that some of these Asian American students, they're just not well-rounded. They don't have social skills. They don't know how to act outside of a strict classroom format.
Yes, that's an argument that's come up, and that's come up especially recently with the Harvard admissions policy. There's a lawsuit now, a class action lawsuit filed by a group of Asians who say that they had higher metrics. They got better grades, they got better standardized test scores, and yet they were not admitted on the same kind of ratio as students from other ethnic groups. Harvard has denied them admissions based on what it considers to be a personality criteria, that they just didn't have the personality. And I'll say I was surprised by the personalities I saw in this classroom. Students, I felt like I was in a room full of the shy, smart kid. And so I think it might also be a little bit of a self-selecting group. I don't want to paint Asians as a monolith. But at the same time, I think that there is a real drive and there is a certain amount of cultural pressure, parental pressure that's put on Asian Americans in this system to really excel. And yeah, that comes at a loss. That comes at a loss of precious time spent idling away the summer, spent at swim lessons or spent at summer camp. But for a lot of parents, they see this as an investment in the future.
Well, speaking of painting young people as a monolith, for the Latino and Black students in the New York City school system, If you are a bright student and you have this potential, but you haven't had that prep time that some of the other Asian students, is it fair to say that you should still have access to one of these schools?
Well, that's really at the heart of this issue, is what's fair. So the people who are for the SHSAT, Asian parents, alumni groups, they say the test is fair because it gives everyone a fair shot. Now, the mayor and school's chancellor, Richard Carranza, are saying that what really needs to happen is that everyone has a fair way to get into these schools, and that the system has traditionally disadvantaged Black and Latino students. And so they need to be given a fair shot at success and a fair shot at these schools so that they can maybe rise to the occasion. Because what we don't see in some of those communities are the test prep centers, is even mention of these schools for a lot of students. So that part has been missing, and that's what the mayor and the chancellor are trying to remedy with this new proposal they've put forth to bring in students who are the top performers at middle schools across the country, across the city, to have an invitation to go to these specialized high schools. And they believe that those students will rise to the occasion if they're given the opportunity to have that academically rigorous, that super engaged intellectual atmosphere.
Okay, and rising to the occasion was one of the questions that I definitely had. Because if you have students who haven't had all that prep, and yet they're suddenly given a spot in one of these super competitive high schools, is it fair to expect them to run at the same pace that everybody else is moving at if you haven't had that training time beforehand?
That's been a big issue, and that's one thing that people say is going to happen who are against this change. They say that the students who are coming in will make these specialized high schools not so special anymore. They'll make it so they're just like any other high school. But at the mayor is calling for is a really novel approach, something that hasn't been tried, to take the students who are doing their best with the circumstances that they have. Granted that middle schools are not on a fair playing field, that there are schools that are screen schools that have gifted and talented programs that better prepare students, and schools that are worse off on those metrics that have really low test scores when it comes to the state test. But trying this new experiment of seeing what it would look like to bring those eager kids, the top kids in each school together, to have a more diverse experience. And what study after study shows is that having a racially diverse, dynamic experience makes everyone better off. And that's really what the mayor is trying to bank on here.
All right. Wesley, I just wanted to get you to weigh in on your thoughts on whether or not further diversifying the specialized high schools actually does make for a better high school experience for the kids.
Well, so as of right now, I believe that more than half of all the kids enrolled in the specialized high schools come from 21 middle schools. And those middle schools are either magnet schools or schools that are disproportionately white, or there are actually a small handful of high schools in heavily Asian communities in Queens or in Brooklyn that contribute far beyond the number of the schools. And so what we're looking at here is taking a single citywide competition based upon a single standardized exam that everybody has to take. They have to answer the right questions. They take it individually. They arrive at a score that is their own individual score that is going to be judged against other scores quantitatively without any other sort of subjective biases getting into it, and turning it into 600 individual competitions within schools. And that school that we end up with might be a perfectly fine school, and I actually think that it would be useful to create a tier of schools that selected in this way, but it certainly won't be the Stuyvesant that it has been for decades. The school will fundamentally change because Stuyvesant doesn't have any more, so it doesn't have a lower student-to-teacher ratio. Like when they say that it's elite, it conjures up this image of a school that has superior resources, a team of elite teachers, and none of that is true. What drives, what makes Stuyvesant what it is the sort of ultra-competitive nature of the students who are there, and this has been true for decades. Right now, sort of a school that is mostly composed of immigrants and that has always been composed of immigrants has the fourth highest SAT scores of any high school in the country. So it has higher scores than Packer. It has higher scores than it's just one below Dalton. It has higher scores than Phillips Exeter. Okay, and that will there is zero possibility that will continue to be the case.
Okay, very quickly, Benish.
One thing that I want to add here is just the experience of students. So I spoke to students who are alumni of Stuyvesant, that top high school that you're mentioning, throughout the decades, Black alumni, and what they talked to me about was a real sense of inferiority and of alienation that came from being one of only a few Black students. And they said that came from the experience of knowing that there were so many other students like them in their home communities who may have had a chance, but that they were denied. And that experience is something that has lived with them for years. I spoke to former Deputy Mayor Richard Bury, who said that he developed a real sense of imposter syndrome that followed him even to Harvard and Yale and on to the highest ranks of city government. So what on the other end of this is that those few Black and Latino students who get in are really having a hard time getting through this school beyond the academic rigor, but on a personal and social level. And that's another part of the story that I think doesn't get talked about enough, is these aren't just numbers that we're talking about. These are real people who have really difficult experiences.
Well, speaking of a real person, we have one on the line. Chris Kwok is joining us. He is an alum of Stuyvesant and has done a lot of work advocating for Asian Americans in education, particularly at the specialized high school. So, Chris, I want to welcome you and ask, why are you in favor of the test?
I'm in favor of the test because it is really fair. It's the fairest thing that we have. It's not the most fairest thing in the world that we could possibly come up with. But I think until we have something better, I like to stick with it because it produced a good result. And there are problems with it, but I don't think it's broken. So it doesn't need to be fixed. There are issues, particularly for Black and Latino students and enrollment, but I think that's a complex one. And I think we need to talk about it in different ways than we have up to this point.
Well, then how do you think that we can better balance the playing field?
You know, I think the playing field is balanced. You know, no one complains about the height of a basketball, the size of a football field, the size of a soccer field. These are arbitrary metrics that we choose to be sort of steadfast. And I think the same is true for a standardized test. You know, if you can't afford a test prep, you can go buy a book for $50. And if you're really driven, you can study by yourself. You know, and these test prep centers in the local neighborhoods are not particularly sophisticated or very expensive, but these immigrant parents choose to put their resources towards these test preps and then also pressure on their kids. And, you know, they think it's fair. If their kids don't make it, fine, but they want to put every effort behind, you know, that attempt to make it into one of the schools they want to go to.
And one thing to say about the test itself is that it was changed last year to make it more representative of the curriculum in seventh grade, and yet less Black and Latino students got in. I spoke to a teacher at one of the test prep center I visited yesterday, who teaches in the Bronx, and she told me that she has the majority Black and Latino student population, and those students have not heard of the specialized high schools. It's not on their radar. They face a number of challenges culturally that bar them from being part of this sort of test prep climate. And I think that's another part of the story that we need to add to this. And just doing good in seventh grade, just really knowing the curriculum, is not enough to do well on this test. And that's what teachers have told me, that you really need to work on taking the test, strategizing how to manage your time. Those are things that you really need to have this extra dose of training for, and that some communities have prioritized that, and for others, they're struggling just to have a reasonable kind of experience in middle school and think about getting into, moving on forward with their education. And that's where the level playing field issue comes in, is that middle schools themselves aren't necessarily all equal, and that these schools are asking for students to go above and beyond. And really what's being tested is one's ability to take the test, one's ability to sit down and really master this material. And that's what people see as unfair.
Okay. I'm Jenna Flanagan, and I've been speaking with WNYC education reporter Beenish Ahmed and Wesley Yang, a columnist at Tablet, about the de Blasio administration's plan to increase diversity at New York City's specialized high schools. This is Midday on WNYC, and we'll be right back after a break. Okay, so Beenish, one of the things that seems to be so fascinating about this conversation is that it has awoken the Asian American community, and suddenly you see this political muscle getting flexed that we might not have been paying attention to before.
That's exactly right. I've been to demonstrations outside of City Hall, outside of community education board meetings, and the Asian American community is really coming out in full force about this. And in fact, some organizers of those demonstrations told me that they feel like the de Blasio administration moved forward thinking that the Asian American community wouldn't act because they hadn't been really politically engaged in the past, hadn't necessarily been among the top ethnic groups to be registered to vote. And so that's why they weren't consulted when this proposal was put forward that would really hit them the hardest in terms of taking away spots from Asian American students at these specialized high schools. They are now moving forward at different CEC councils to get them to pass a resolution to say, don't touch the SHSAT. They're trying to register 2,000 people to vote in every school district. So this has really started up a firestorm, and I think that we're going to see a lot of it moving forward. They are 100% activated in a big way, in a way that we haven't seen before. And I want to also add that this, again, is not a monolith. There are some people, including the valedictorian of Stuyvesant, who's an Asian student, who said that he doesn't necessarily think the test is the best way forward. So there are some people who are on the other side of that fence. But by and large, at these rallies, I'm seeing large numbers of Asians saying, save the test.
Okay. And for taking the test and for all of the pressure that's put on these kids, I'm wondering if what happens if you fail, if your parents have put in, and your parents are immigrants, and they've put in all this time and money and sacrifice into getting you into these specialized test classes. If you don't get into one of these high schools, what does that do to the student?
Well, I mean, I think that's a discussion that every student has to have with their parents. And for some that I spoke to, one woman that I spoke to who has two kids who are in Stuyvesant, and her third is in sixth grade preparing for this specialized high school exam. And she said that if her daughter doesn't get in, she's going to enroll her in a public school in Long Island. So people have a few contingency plans. Sometimes it means going to their zoned school. But oftentimes what's not in question is sending students to a private school. That's just something that I think the idea of having a free public education is something that's really important to this community.
All right. Well, let's go to a call from Effany in Edison in New Jersey. Effany, what's your thoughts?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I just had a comment. So I'm the daughter of two Chinese immigrants, and I grew up in a town called Edison, and it's a really diverse town in the sense that there are a lot of Indian and Asian Americans and Chinese Americans who live here. And something that I've noticed going to a public school where this is the majority population is that a lot of the points that you've been making about test prep being perhaps the center of their educational focus and character is very accurate. And I want to say that at the same time, like, I do believe that diversity should be more increased in a sense for Black and Latinos, perhaps even at the cost of Asian students. But at the same time, we have to realize that Asians and Black and Latino and all people of color, they are marginalized groups at the same time. And these children of immigrants who are Asian are separate entities from their parents, and perhaps some are really good at testing, but there are also cases where some perhaps are more well-rounded than better at tests. So I just want the stereotype perhaps to be more carefully considered, for people to always be more aware, and that also for a lot of Asian students who grow up in America and are basically Americanized but have parents from Asia, a lot of times they struggle with a lot of difficulties from their educational culture. And for instance, like, I think mental health for these students really needs to be prioritized.
And you sort of touched on that earlier when we were talking about what becomes of some of these students when they've had all this pressure put on them at such a young age.
Right. It is a huge responsibility to bear, to think that you are sometimes vicariously living out the dreams of your parents, that you are expected to do what your parents were unable to do as immigrants, to have a well-paying professional job, to make a good life for yourself. That's a lot of pressure to even comprehend at the age of 12 or 13, at the age when students are gearing up for this test. And beyond that, to Effany's point, I think it's really important to say that some people are really keen to point out that this is pitting some minority groups against other minority groups. And in the end, what we have is a zero-sum game, that there are only a certain amount of seats at these schools. And some say that's what the mayor really should be thinking about, is how to make, one, the high schools that are in existence better so that more people are wanting to get into more of these schools and not just a handful of these elite schools that are highly competitive, but also maybe opening up a few more specialized high schools so that it isn't, you know, that the Latino and Black students get in at the expense of Asian students.
Or perhaps putting more of these test prep schools or classes in more neighborhoods so that more kids have access to them earlier on. Chris, I wanted to get your thoughts on changing this high schools.
Yeah, I mean, you know, free test prep through New York City Board of Ed in the DREAM program has been available for at least two decades in one form or another. And, you know, I think I'm all for adding more high schools, particularly in Queens and Brooklyn, where large amounts of Asian American immigrant kids travel 2 hours each day to go to school. So, and if I might just add, you know, historically, there has been significant African-American and Latino representation at these schools. When I graduated from SCI in 1992, Brooklyn Tech was 50% African-American and Latino. So I think an interesting, more nuanced question to ask about it is, what happened? Because they used to be represented at these schools in numbers that used to be acceptable to most people, but it went away. And I do think that the fact that the test prep and the curve has been made much more difficult. And that's the new reality.
Well, Beenish, have we seen a decline in the Black and Latino populations at these schools? And why has that happened?
Definitely. There has been a downward trend of admission for Black and Latino students since the test was enacted into law for the top three schools in the system. And there's a lot of different parts of this issue. There's a lot of different ways to kind of parse this out. And one of them is the decline of gifted and talented programs. A lot of them are now in only certain schools that require admission, that's hard to navigate, that the Asian American community sort of has flocked around schools that are that offer that. But at the same time, there have been less Black and Latino students placed into those programs. That's something that has been reported on sort of anecdotally. But beyond that, there is a sense, you know, the city has changed. There's been a rise in Asian American students. There's been, you know, we saw white flight in the 80s. There's been a real movement in these schools. But I think one thing that everyone kind of comes back to is a decline of gifted and talented programs and the decline of really good middle schools that used to send even Black and Latino students to these city school, to these top specialized high schools in large number. But I want to come back to one point, which is a kind of historical point, is that this test was codified into law in 1971 for these top three schools. And it happened in a similar climate as we're seeing now, with people saying that the test was meant to, quote, screen out Black and, in the day's parlance, Puerto Rican students. And so there is kind of this sense, and there has always been this sense, that the test was a way to keep Black and Latino students out. And critics of the test say that it's doing its job. That's what it was meant to do. So there's a lot of controversy around this. But I think at the end of the day, people who are pro-test, who are anti-test, all of them sort of are united in saying that there needs to be better middle schools, that there need to be more gifted and talented programs, that there needs to be more awareness of these tests, whether that means asking top performers at schools to take the test is another option.
Wesley, I want to bring you back to the conversation and get your take on the fairness of this test, that, you know, there are other programs that were there for Black and Latino students, and maybe we need to bring those back to get them better prepared.
I think you can't emphasize enough the importance of the decline of gifted and talented programs, which began in the 80s and continued sort of in the 90s. And this happened because there was a move against tracking, right, within schools, because the gifted and talented programs, even in areas that had very large Black populations, tended to have more whites than Blacks, but there were still Blacks and Hispanics that were enrolled in the program. And so they were seen as a kind of illegitimate form of privilege, and they were abolished. But as a result of that abolition, two things happened. More white students were pushed out of the public school system into the private school system, such that we have about 15% of the New York City public school system, the kids in the system are white. And on the other hand, there's a whole population of kids who, you know, back in 1989, Brooklyn Tech was 67% Black and Hispanics. And those were the kids who had been prepared within those gifted and talented programs to sort of have a mentality to target the specialized high schools. And those were the kids that got in. In addition to that, another thing happened, which was in the 1990s, we saw the rise of these nonprofit, sort of hedge fund funded prep for prep programs that would focus on poor minorities with a particular emphasis on Blacks and Hispanics, taking them and creating a pipeline for them to attend, Phillips Exeter, Dalton, some of the most exclusive prep schools in the country. And so this other option, which is, you know, it's sort of nominally open to Asians, but focuses more on what are called the historically underrepresented groups, Blacks and Hispanics, has taken out hundreds of students who might now be attending the specialized high school who have a better option at their disposal. So the percentage at which Asians sort of who score high on this on the test, who actually accept their admission into Stuyvesant or Bronx Science, is double that of some other groups who get in, but the same kids who have the ability to pass those tests and get in also have a better option. They can go to Exeter or Andover and have a full ride paid for them. So this is subtracting, you know, more than 1,000 Black and Hispanic kids who could be a part of the specialized high school system, who now we have these figures that look so bad, and yet what that could be reflecting is the results of another option that's available to them. It's not clear to me at all, actually, once you take that into account, that we're seeing anything other than the departure of the system of those who are equipped to get in, exiting the system because they have a better option, leaving behind the specialized high school as the best option for
okay.
a particular community.
Wesley, I'm just going to cut you off real quick. I want to hear from Jordan from Manalapan, New Jersey.
Hi, my name is Jordan. I did research for about a year and a half and created a thesis focusing on the admissions quotas, mostly in public and private universities, and how immigrants were cut off in order to create a better environment on campus according to the people who control the universities. And they did that at the expense of, they did that often at the expense of their own academics in order to have more of one particular population, generally the white, the Anglo-Saxon, Protestant, rich families that they preferred. And so the quota systems that we're seeing today, even in affirmative action, are kind of the flip side of that exact system.
Okay, all right, well, listen. Jordan, thank you so much for joining us.
For having me.
So going back to what Wesley was saying, though, about the schools being better prepared for more students by offering more programs, by making that more equitable for everybody, is that a better tack that the mayor should have gone after as opposed to just saying that we should open up more spots in these specific schools?
You know, I think that for the mayor, he feels a lot of pressure to do something on this issue of segregation, which has been he's been circling around without ever using the word for a long time. And so these schools are one way to do that, and they are really symbolic as a move.
Thanks so much for joining me today. I'm Jenna Flanagan, and I've been speaking with WNYC education reporter Beinish Ahmed and Wesley Yang, a columnist at Tablet, about the de Blasio administration's plan to increase diversity at New York City specialized high schools. On tomorrow's show, Nancy Giles guest hosts. First, she'll speak with Robin De Jesus, Michael Benjamin Washington, and Tut Watkins, who are starring in the Broadway revival of The Boys in the Band. Then, best-selling author Linda LaPlante discusses turning her 1983 thriller, Widows, into a feature film directed by Oscar winner Steve McQueen. Plus, Tony-winning director John Doyle and Tony-winning actor Anika Noni Rose talk about their new production of Carmen Jones. And our latest Please Explain is all about the neurological phenomenon of synesthesia. Our show is produced by Catherine Millsap, Ursula Sommer, Jules Dodson, and Sam Anderson. Melissa Egan is executive producer. Matt Miranda was at the audio controls. And we had help today from Allison Light. I'm Jenna Flanagan, and thanks for listening, and join us again tomorrow.